everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We are talking about Season 3, Episode 8, The Sacred Taking, which you might ask, what is that? How is it distinct from a previous ritual? Folks, this is going to be a two-parter. Liz has notated pretty clearly up front, two-parter, yeah?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about this episode.
Fairly, too. There are so many things in this episode that are, like, off and wrong and just like, huh? That I missed, like, half of them. It was unbelievable. I was reading through your notes, and I'm like, oh, my God, they just slipped that right past me. It's unbelievable. Like, I mean, I guess it's like they're trying to ask you to keep count of how many, like, red balls are on the floor, and then they just, like, dump, like, 37,000 across, and you're like, what? How am I supposed to keep track of all these? Oh, holy shit. Yeah. And joined again by Liz, Michelle Lovely, and Slowby Face.
Yo.
That's us. This is one of those episodes where, as soon as it started and, like, the opening sequence started playing, I had to double check to make sure I didn't accidentally, like, skip ahead an episode. Because the tone of the intro of this episode, I'm like, okay, I definitely missed something. There's like, a lot of lead up to this, surely. No, it's, like, such a weird, like, here's a character that has shown no proclivity to doing this kind of activity, doing a really weird activity that you would never expect that they would do, ? So I guess, to set the stage, Queenie is going under a bridge.
Okay.
I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know where. I assume somewhere in New Orleans.
Sorry.
But, like, she seems to know where she's going, and we'll find out, and it's like, she definitely knows where she's going. How she knows where she's going, and how she knows about this person. Anyway, she's under a bridge looking at homeless people, and that sounds like I'm making a joke, but that's what she's doing. She is walking through, like, a homeless people encampment, and just kind of looking at each one of them, like, inspecting them in, like, a really weird way.
And also, it's like, I think it's supposed to be framed partially as, like, she's, like, maybe walking back from work a little bit. Because she worked at a restaurant, right? Earlier in the season?
She did, but she doesn't now.
Yeah, I think she lost the now, job because of the, right? Oh, sorry.
Right, they might have just forgot.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they just forgot when they did this framing, but yeah.
Yeah, because, like, you'll see, like, my notes say, is this a flashback? Wait, no, it's the future, actually, because it does seem like she's coming home from work in the, like, late at night, and the guy
and
she's about
extra
to...
confusing, because a guy walks up to her and literally says, let me guess, walking home from work late at night, taking a shortcut or something, like, just does the framing.
You know,
yeah.
This is, I think, though, it's also a rare moment American Horror Story where that's, like, not actually what's happening, you know what I mean? Because usually they do that to, like, kind of give you a little exposition, like, this is what's happening, and then I think here it's just like, no, I came here looking for you, actually, you know. But
which I think would work better if the opening wasn't already so, like, out of left field that it's hard to place in time.
Yeah, like, it's hard, it's really, really hard to explain, and I tried to nail it down, like, I watched the opening a few times, and I tried to nail it down, but it's also hard to convey that, like, the vibe of the opening is different than, like, all of the other openings of every other, maybe not the Axeman one, but that's because it was so weird, but, like, it's hard to convey, but this specific sequence seems like it would be a flashback or, like, a dream sequence or something that would, like, give us some kind of backstory about something.
God,
it's
or even,
weird.
Even, like, just a time skip, and this is how they introduce it, which would be kind of cool and wild, right? Like, that would actually be interesting. Like, oh, Queenie's just, like, wild as fuck now. Like, just does this shit. Okay. But no, yeah, it's just, like, the next day.
Yeah, it's the next day, and now Queenie is just a different character. And in case you're wondering what she's doing, she's, like, baiting a certain guy who lives there to, like, sexually assault her. I'm not making that up. That is what is happening. And he does start, like, being like, I'm gonna sexually assault ya.
Literally,
and she's,
by the
like,
way. Like, with a Creole accent, just like, now here's what's going to happen next. And you know what I mean? And it's like fucking weird.
I'm going to commit a crime. Let me describe it in detail.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, she just pulls out like a nail bat or a nail 2x4 and swings it at herself and is like, ah, gotcha, Joker's trick. And he's like, ah, what the heck? And then she pulls it out and then just hits him with it normally. Yeah. And is like, yeah, it works forwards too.
But like, what? Then, you know, like.
Does it just to flex on people, because that's what she did to Spalding too. She's like, I'm gonna hit you regular style, but I am also gonna use my ability. I think it's because like Queenie's ability doesn't really like have a lot of practical applications in a fight unless she's actively fighting somebody, which leads to the question, hey, now that I'm thinking about it, how did Queenie get gored by the Minotaur? I have a few questions. Why did she simply not make it kill the Minotaur?
Blindsided.
They do a thing in season 5, I think, or something. Well, yeah, if I remember, where they retroactively explain it, which I think is bullshit because I feel like they do that when they realize they've had a plot hole and rather than let it go, they just do it again. I don't know if I should. I don't think it matters. I don't know. Well, whatever.
No, I'll get mad about it then.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
They do show her like getting hit and getting hurt by things that she's caught unawares by. So like, yeah. I think it might just be that, right? Yeah, like just got caught and caught off guard.
Like, but she's looking at the Minotaur like the whole time and like trying to bang him. So
maybe like, you know, they got busy and like, got around back.
It's a bullshit like asterisk loophole kind of thing. Like, that's, like, in season 5, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, Minotaurs are an exception. That's not it, you know? But it's like, wait, what? You never told me that. It's, like, one of those things.
They were tired of getting letters about it and posts on Reddit, so they had to retroactively.
We were right, yeah.
Also, yeah, as soon as Queenie's power, like, got retrofitted to, like, she has to be aware of the thing that is happening and possibly also inflicting it on herself, way worse. completely blown out by gun.
Yeah.
Common problem I'm finding. A lot of these witches blown out by gun. Thank God the only guy with gun is dog shit.
Yeah. Thank God the only assassin in this entire series is like really just the worst at being one in general. But not Queenie. She's there to assassinate this guy in a really confusing way. And like as she's beating this man up with a 2x4, Zoe starts talking to her in her mind.
She disappears. Oh no! Wait. Oh, it is mental. I thought then they walk
it's
up.
It's both. Well, oh, okay. I don't know. It's possible she was yelling because they do walk up, but the way that it's framed is absolutely like Zoe is talking in her mind because it's like,
oh, interesting.
Queenie, like it's in her brain. That doesn't make any sense because that's not a power we've seen anybody have. But it is definitely, it's either that or they were trying to like, I don't know, they ADR'd in Zoe's voice and they wanted it to sound far away.
Yeah.
And then Zoe and Madison walk up. How in the fuck do they know where Queenie is? Who knows? And how did they know to show up right then? Who knows? But they're together because I guess they're like sister wives now or whatever. And they're like, hey, Queenie, come home. What are you doing? Why are you beating up this homeless guy? And Queenie's like, no, I didn't have any friends at the house. That sucks. And Madison's like, well, you know what? Fiona like slit my throat and I still stuck around. So maybe you should just get over it. And I don't know that that's the own that Madison thinks it is, but like Madison does make a good point. At least Madison's in it for the long haul, I guess.
As soon as she tasted Cordelia's like 37 herbs and spices and like got her skin back, I'd be like, all right, good. Mission accomplished. See you later. If I have a weird problem, I'll come back and see if we can work this out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Zoe is like, you got to come back to the house. We got to pick a new supreme. And Queenie's like, no. And starts beating the homeless man again. They're both like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, she was doing that when you walked up. So I don't know why this is confusing now.
Yeah. And they're like, you're beating up an innocent man. He's like, he's not innocent. He's a rapist, and he's done this before, and and now I'm here to get rid of, you know. It's because what's her face wants a dark heart, right?
Yeah, Marie Laveau needed a dark heart, and this guy's already raped 3 schoolgirls, and I'm like, how do you know that? And like, if that's like known information,
right?
Why are y'all just letting him vibe out here? Like, what is going on?
Like, yeah, just like that's. I think you can like throw in an anonymous tip somewhere on that one.
Yeah,
I think you're allowed
the ethical
to
dilemma
here.
Of knowing too much via magic. what do you have to control? Yeah.
You can just wait until you need a dark heart, I guess, and then just steal his ? Also,
like, if you need a super juicy one, didn't you just get hand delivered like the final boss dark heart?
Yeah, you have Delphine. That's what I was gonna say. I'm like, you still have Delphine in your possession. That's like the worst one you can get. Like, that's like the literally the worst heart you can have.
You know what? Maybe she, you know, I get this as a gamer. I get this. Maybe she's saving the best one for later, just in case she needs it. Like, that one's like so good. Like, what if there's a harder part later and you really need that one?
It still feels though, like, kind of like Marie Laveau's like, I'm keeping this guy around just in case I need to test somebody, which is like kind of fucked up. Like,
yeah, did you not find out until like the third one, or like have you known for a bit?
Yeah, if you know the specific number and like who the victims are, because they say who the victims are, so it's like, you obviously have some pretty intimate knowledge of this man's crimes. I don't know, I'm ACAB, but like, maybe drop an anonymous tip at police station, or I don't know, you seem to be into this vigilante thing, maybe just to take care of it yourself. You don't gotta kill him, you can just like cut his dick off or whatever. Like,
there's like,
you can summon zombies at him.
There's like
There's like a
missing scene with like Marie Laveau at like the voodoo computer in the voodoo cave, where she's like, wait, I got the perfect guy for you, and like types it in. It's like, yep, we've triangulated him here.
That
Queenie.
Scene that she was sitting on her bone throne with the iPad, that's what she was doing. She wasn't playing Candy Crush. She was going through her list of like Craigslist of like who has the darkest heart.
The bone throne sounds like some like terrible pickup artist like thing, or you know what I mean? Like, just hanging out at the bone throne. Anyway, sorry.
God.
But yeah.
So like, also we forgot to mention at the beginning of this scene when Queenie is walking under the bridge, they play the most stock ass Tom and Jerry ass cat sound. And it's like, did you not think we'd believe that she was under a bridge unless there was like a weird stalk? It was like the Wilhelm scream of cat sounds is what it was. And it's like, well, like, who was that for? Because like, I believed she was under a bridge. You didn't have to like, a cat noise didn't like prove it. It was so, and then you see a rat and I'm like, okay, like, is this a metaphor? What is going on?
I think I figured it out. The missing scene is that she's like, I'm getting on my delegation arc. I'm going to start making other people do stuff more so that I can do less. Like, she's just trying to establish, you know, a company before she leaves. So like, has to, you know, get a weird Thomas Kincaid assassin and then like trick Queenie into killing a guy under a bridge, I guess.
Yeah, to get his heart. Like, fortunately, this doesn't really apply to the rest of the episode. It's just this opening sequence. But like, on the same note as the stock cat sound, when she and I'm not making this up, rips the guy's heart out
God,
of his body.
The heartbeat.
There is, she's holding the heart, which is huge, by the way. Just massive. It looks like a cow heart. It is huge.
That homeless man, Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's still beating, like, in her hand. And I know some of you are probably like, oh, well, the heart probably still beats for like a few seconds after you rip it out. No, she gives like a little speech while she's holding it, and it never stops beating the whole time, and it's very loud. Like, it's like Dead by Daylight terror radius loud. Like, it's very, very loud the whole time she's giving her weird little speech. And she's like, war is coming and you guys are gonna lose. Me doing the jerk off motion with my hand. In case you're wondering, this will not be relevant for the rest of the episode, which is crazy given how insane this opening sequence is, because so many characters for the rest of this goddamn episode will be like, where is Delphine? And I'm not making a joke right now. They say it like 7 times.
Yeah.
Different people will be like, where's Delphine? But not a single person says, where's Queenie? It's
kind of does validate everything that, you know, Marie LaBeouf
told
her,
really,
right?
that is like kind of justifying Queenie, huh?
Yeah.
Where's that funny old racist lady? I miss her.
I mean, I guess I'm kind of glad they don't loop Queenie in with that, because almost all the times they ask where those people are, they're like, where is the wait staff? So I'm glad they don't, like, lump Queenie in with that. But, like, they're, like, attack. They should probably have all of their witches around, or at least be aware of where they are.
Right?
Especially the people in charge.
I know, they're terrible at this school thing. Like, do we have another witch here? Like, Nan? No, not Nan.
No, Nan's
like,
over here.
Like, stab her. She stabbed herself and you get stabbed. Like, oh, right. No, I think that's Nan, you know? Or like... Isn't that Zoe?
Madison?
Not Zoe's power, no. You know,
they're doing a head count, but they like aren't counting right because they didn't expect Madison to get brought back to life, so they keep thinking they have the right amount of witches because Madison's
like Home
back.
Alone, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, or like, my God.
Wait, like, who had the power where you stab yourself and the other person gets Zoe's like, me. That was mine.
Zoe's like, yeah, that's
no,
me.
No, not you get stabbed with a penis, you idiot. No, the other one.
Oh, I was hoping you forgot.
Oh, my bad. But you said there were 6. Well, but one of them died. Oh, right, one of them died. Yeah, so we have all of them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
God. So yeah, that's the opening that, like I just said, has nothing to do with the rest of the episode and will not be referenced for the rest of the episode. We will see Queenie again for like one scene. It will be completely unrelated to this opening sequence.
By the way, you know, just very quick, isn't there a chance that Hank could have killed Queenie and then Marie Laveau like fucks that up, you know? Like,
I
instead
mean,
of being able to recruit Queenie then? Because she didn't tell him, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, like that or right now Delia is very preoccupied with her mom and getting her mom killed. Would not be out of the question to assume that if Fiona killed Madison, that she might have also killed Queenie. And Delia clearly doesn't know where Queenie is for this episode. So you'd think she'd have a little bit of urgency, like, hey, where is one of my students when my mother is actively killing my students? Maybe I should look into that. No pun intended, because she's blind.
Literally never just turns to any of the girls and goes, hey, are any of you missing lately?
Yeah.
like, even if you're blind, you could still be like, hey, you're all here, right? Like, you'd tell me if one of you isn't here, yeah?
And, like, that's the other thing is, like, they don't have a... It's not like hiding Madison. Like, they don't have a reason to hide the information about Queenie from Delia. They have no incentive to do that. So, like, Madison and Zoe clearly know where Queenie is. And again, Delia will say something to the effect that's like, okay, so she doesn't know where Queenie is. And, like, doesn't care, hasn't thought... Not, like, in a mean way, just, like, hasn't thought about it. When it wouldn't make any sense for that not to be known information. Like, if one of yours goes over to, like, the voodoo house and becomes one of the voodoo house people, you would probably know about it or at least, like, want to relay that information to someone who has authority that isn't Fiona. But that doesn't happen. And I'm not sure narratively why. I can only assume that, much like many of the characters in this show, they just forgot about it. And forgot about how characters interact. You know what they didn't forget, unfortunately, this episode? They will by the end
Yoda
of it.
Yoda has cancer again.
Yoda has cancer again. But, like, bad for some reason. Like, way worse than before. She gives, like, a whole speech about it, like, a really long, like, monologue in her mind, like a voiceover about how much her cancer fucking sucks, which Yeah, that that seems to be how much cancer is.
Most people I know are not a fan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like the most like fun experience, supreme or not supreme. She does like in her like little monologue makes a cute little like reference to Bewitched. She says something to the effect of like, I look less like Samantha and more like Endora every day. And it made me realize how much I miss the cute witch puns from episode 1 and 2 back when the writing of this season was actually enjoyable and
fun.
Yeah.
Full of spirit. Yeah.
Had some personality. Then like, It's unclear because while she's giving this speech,
just to be clear, I look less Samantha and more Endora every day, and she's like blaming that on not being the Supreme anymore. But like, that's just getting older, right?
Yeah, that's just aging. Yeah. That's just how aging works. And also, like, Endora's not like a crone. Endora's just like older lady, and she's not even like old. Yeah. She's just like an older lady.
That's like, I thought of that pun, like when you're writing it, it's like, I thought of that, and my second thought was it doesn't work, but I really want to use it anyway, so I just will. Never mind. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Yeah, they like, whoever they were holding hostage for the writing for the first two episodes got free out of the cage for like 1 minute, mm-hmm. and they're like, we don't think they put anything in the script, but I'm not going to check.
I think the muse died. Yeah, like, I don't know what happened, but she is gone from me. Anyway, back to...
And then, like, Fiona, during her, like, weird little speech, like, I don't know if this was, like, something she just imagined happening or if it was real, because if it was real, very funny.
I hope it's real.
Yeah.
It was so hard. It's so hard.
God. Yeah, so like she like sees a flashback, I assume, either that or she's imagining that it's happening, which even if she is imagining that it's happening, very funny thing to imagine.
Brutal cell phone.
Yeah,
the self-loathing there is wild.
She's like, this is what happened when I told my daughter that I didn't have long to live. And she's like sitting in a chair, like all feeble, like talking to Delia and is like, I'm gonna die soon. And Delia's like, can you at least do us a favor and die before Thanksgiving so we don't have to eat your shitty stuffing? I'm like, holy shit.
That's rough.
Pulling out the fucking Dave Chappelle wrap it up button after someone tells you they're dying.
And like I said,
holy shit.
And like, if she's imagining it, if she's like imagining that this is how it would go, incredibly funny cell phone. Like, just an incredibly funny cell phone. But if not, that means that Delia like knows she's dying, which means that like a good 15 minutes of this episode that's going to happen later, they don't have any reason to do it. Like at all. And it's very confusing why they decide to. Because she would have no reason to want to do this. So just keep that in mind. I know what you're all thinking. We haven't talked to the Axeman recently. Great news. We're gonna. He's back. And she's hanging out with him. In bed. I guess they just had sex or whatever. And they're both smoking. And she's like, yeah, I'm turbo dying.
You wanna spend the rest of your life in Marrakesh and play out the jazz in Marrakesh?
I don't know why they have him do this the entire time, but yeah, he's just like, how about we, go on exotic vacations for your final time on Earth? And she just kind of gives him my body's going to fall apart and be gross, and I don't want you to see that. And he's like, have you considered taking your own life? I'm too much of that bitch to do that, which is a great reason for the record. Like, she just straight up says, like, no, I hate too many people to give them the satisfaction of killing myself, which, yeah, okay.
I mean, that is the one thing in this episode, because this will be a reoccurring theme for the rest of this episode, is Fiona living out of spite. Same. Truly same. Like, spite is a hell of an incentive to stay alive. Hell yeah, gamer. Follow-up question that I didn't note here, but I am just just rolling it over in my mind. Do you think the Axeman can get a passport?
You know, at this point, why the hell not, right?
Like, he can just turn invisible. Like, he's a ghost. They can usually do that.
But, like, they're not supposed to be able to move places, right? like you're like stuck to where you died, but not him, I guess.
Well, he got released.
Which, yeah, he got the ghost nut, and now he can go wherever. But does he have to like? Okay, so we agree ghosts can go invisible, right? Everyone knows this.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
He does it.
So yeah. Does he have to get on a plane if he goes somewhere, or can he like teleport? I'm just wondering, because like it would be funny if like, yeah, he just like goes to the airport and then is just like, okay, see you once we're in France. And then just kind of like lies in the middle of the aisle or whatever. And then once they get there, he walks off and
just sits on Fiona's lap for the whole flight. She puts him in the overhead compartment. Oh my god. Anyway, that doesn't happen, though it would be very funny. And she's like, my cancer's getting worse because another girl's becoming the Supreme or whatever. And at that point, like, I completely repressed the Axeman and all of his involvement in this season. I forgot like what happened next, but I'm like, does he like offer to kill one of the girls? I don't remember, but that's not what happens. I know what has been just gnawing at everybody's mind since we started recording this episode, and that's, please, Liz, please, everyone, where's Luke?
Where's Luke? We've all been waiting. Where's Luke? Remember Luke? Remember when Luke got attacked by zombies with the team?
It took me a minute. I was like, who the fuck is... Oh, right, yeah.
Luke's alive and home. And obviously it hasn't been like that long since Halloween because he has a pretty fresh axe wound on his back still. And in case some of you are like, no, really, who the fuck is Luke? That's the next door neighbor who was super hot, who had the religious mom from Bo is Afraid. And I guess he's home now.
Like, oh, that's her. Hoonan
was
right.
Like hitting it off with and like running with the zombies and stuff. Yeah, all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's cannot overstate, a grown ass man, probably in his late 30s. And he's like, Mom, no, the next door neighbors are really nice. They saved me from zombies. And she goes, and I'm not making this up because I'm not this funny. No, they didn't save you. Only Jesus can save you. And I'm like, that's not how this works. That's not how English works.
That doesn't apply here, right?
That's also not how religious people think. At least for where I came from in religion, it's usually the idea is like, God sends something or someone or some form of intervention or aid. It's not like God, like Jesus comes down personally and is like, I've got you, my son. That pulls out a chainsaw and kills the zombies.
That's like a social media reply where it's like, you know, they save me. And then they go like, only Jesus can save you. Because then it's like, no, we're not talking about that, Carol. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, the closest thing I can think of growing up in like a supremely religious like area in the South and also having a very religious family is when people are like, when you tell someone like, oh, yeah, I was really lucky. So blah, 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 blah. And they're like, no, you weren't lucky. You were blessed. Like,
oh,
that's like the closest thing I can think of that I've ever experienced. But again, like, this doesn't make sense because this is like, oh, yeah, I was in a car accident and a paramedic saved me. And then someone's like, no, only Jesus can save you. And I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you because Jesus isn't the one who pulled me out of the burning vehicle. It was the paramedic.
I guess Jesus was acting through the witches, which seems like a very un-Jesus move, but you know what?
Yeah.
I mean, hey.
If only there was a saying about the Christian God and his mysterious nature. Oh, well.
No, my son, when you saw one chainsaw in the sand, it was then that I carved through the zombies.
Yeah. I know what saying you're talking about. Jesus, take the wheel. Carrie Underwood was trying to warn us about this.
Swerve it left or right. Just do it. So anyway, obviously, since only Jesus can save you, we all know what that means and what this mom is about to do. Chemical enema. Because that's what you have to do, right? Like, if you know, that's what all good religious boys know this. It's just like, I've been tainted by witches. Time to get a... like a fucking like a comet enema. I don't even, like, what was she blending in there?
It's like so weird. She just pulls out like the pump and the tube, and you're like, what is this now? Like,
we, she's what like we a whole kit. She, because like she looks at him and like he looks at her like he knows, like, oh no, now it, that means that it's enema time, and she's like, yep, it's enema time, and she pulls out her like enema kit. And, like, we're supposed to know, like, what this is.
Like, fucking, like, Clorox and bleach and, like, Drano tablets. And I'm like, you know, like, you absorb way more toxins through your butt, right? Like, that's the, that's, like, a problem.
You, like, you have it, to know, too, that the
table. You'd be so dead.
The table read for this, like, everyone squinted almost simultaneously, where it's like, like Megan pulls out an enema to show him, you know, like. Wait, what?
And everyone knows what happens next. Obviously, the whole audience will know exactly what's about to happen, of course. Yeah.
So she yells at him, like, pants down, it's enema time. And he goes, no, mom. She goes, enema time. And he goes, okay. And she gives him an enema made out of bathroom chemicals that I cannot emphasize enough. Not only would kill you, but would hurt tremendously the entire time you were dying. It would be so bad. Nausea, pain, burning, nerves dying, the whole nine. Just nothing about this is going to be good.
Jesus loves when you get a lie enema. It's like his favorite thing. It's in the Bible, actually. Did you know this?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Chuck Fallon eats the Bible. That's right.
Oh, and, like, I have a note in here. I'm like, is this... Because, like, there's, like, a horror sting that plays over the scene of him getting in the bathtub, and she's, like, looking down at him while she starts the enema process. And I'm like, is this horror? Making a grown man get an enema in the bathtub? Is this anything?
It didn't exist at the time, but this feels like what ChatGPT would think horror is. You know, like, make me something scary. Enema.
The Willy Wonka experience, but it's
scarier.
Horror.
Enema with bleach. You know what I mean?
Also, like, the mismatch in physicality here is so extreme that it is just not sold in any way, shape, or form. Because, like, we haven't seen these characters interact enough to possibly see how there could be a power dynamic in place severe enough that this, you know, 34, 35 year old man who is, you know, built would just be like, okay, funny little lady, you can stick the tube up my butt. Like, he would have ample time to be like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, no, absolutely not. That would kill me and hurt the entire time I was dying. Absolutely not.
Maybe he's worked up like an immunity, and that's why he's like, oh, shucks, not again. But yeah, so that scene happens. And then, confusingly, like, Nan comes into the room where Madison and Zoe are already having a meeting with Delia. And we hear, like, Luke screaming, like, no, 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 no. And it's, like, implied that Nan hears that in her head because she's like, no, they're hurting him. And I'm like, okay, one of two things has to be true. Either Luke is screaming in his head. Just right. No.
Oh, right, because she's a mind reader. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, she doesn't, like, have super hearing. She's not like Charles Xavier in the projection dome or whatever. Yeah. She doesn't have both.
Maybe both.
Yeah, because that has to be the other thing, is that he's yelling so loud that the other people in the room also hear him, which means that they're all just sitting there having their meeting while a man getting a chemical bleach enema
Hold up. I'm sorry. Are you implying that someone hearing someone else say something counts as someone else's thought, as like a thought you can read for the intent of mind reading? Because that's like a huge buff if that's the case. You have like full intelligence abilities, right? Anyone is surveillance.
Oh my God.
This is amazing.
Yeah, actually.
But, well, that's why I like bring it up, is because if it's the first thing and she's just hearing his thoughts, that means
Wild.
Luke is just thinking, no, 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 while he's getting an enema, which, like, I mean, I know everybody's different. I know everybody's different. But if I was getting a chemical enema, I don't think I would be audibly screaming in my own head, no, 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 no. Like, I'd be thinking, like, ow, this hurts. My butthole. Ow, my butthole.
Maybe that's how he thinks. Maybe he's an adventure game character and he has all his dialogue options that he's thinking out, like, no, 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 stop, stop, stop. Like, I'll go with no.
He's just spamming A.
Yeah.
Think of all the worst times I've been in pain. It's just like your mind usually goes blank.
Yeah, right.
For the most part, like it's just like you can't think. There's no capacity for that left over.
Yeah. Your
or
body,
I'm thinking like,
yeah.
Oh fuck, son of a bitch. Like I'm just like swearing. Like all of my thoughts are about the pain. Like it's not like me like calling an audible. Like oh no, ow, ow. I wish someone would help me.
Yeah. Like, no, that's yeah, exactly. It's your brain just being like, let's time out. You're going to need to stop this first thing. You know? Like,
well, either way.
Yeah.
It's neither here nor there because Nan comes in and goes, hey, I hear Luke complaining. And they go, shut the fuck up, Nan. Just keep talking. Like, they just completely ignore.
Which, like I said, is very funny if you think about it from the perspective of that they can also hear him because he's just being loud, because that means they're having this meeting and he's just hollering because his butthole hurts. And they're like, we don't have time to deal with this right now. We have more important things to deal with. So they're having a meeting. And they're making a plan to kill Fiona. I don't know why, because if the thing that Fiona said happened, then, like, Delia knows that Fiona's about to die. So she's, as long as you, like, keep the girls safe and make, like, a plan to make sure that she doesn't get a hold of one of the girls and, like, doesn't get to be alone with them, you can just wait out the timer. You can just timer scam her. but they've decided that it's also, like, or, like, later, Madison will bring up that, like, hey, you have evidence that she killed someone, a witch. Just have her burned at the stake. We don't need to do this weird Home Alone thing that we're doing.
Yeah, like, you have the site, and I got my throat cut, and, like, we can explain what happened. Yeah, I don't know why they just give up on that plan. They're like, nah, they'll do it. Because, like, especially after she got Myrtle burned, right? Like, they would be very interested in this turnabout. They would love to hear about this, I'm sure.
Which, granted, they don't know about Myrtle yet. They'll find out about Myrtle in about 2 seconds, but...
Oh, I mean the council, for what it's worth.
But, like, even then, like, there's obviously, like, a hierarchy of, like, magical beings, because I can't imagine the council ends at those three people, because that's not really a council. That's just, like, other witches that live outside the house at that point. So there's got to be, like, a higher authority that they have to answer to. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to enforce rules against, like, someone like Fiona, for example, because that person would just become a dictator. So I would just maybe make the higher ups aware, like, hey, we have evidence that, the Supreme killed one of the people, maybe deal with it. But instead they decide to do a Home Alone ass ritual called, you're never gonna guess. It's called the Sacred Taking, the name of the episode. And we'll get there in a second. The Sacred Taking as a ritual, I have a lot of thoughts about, because it is the most superfluous, unnecessary plot device in this show, or this season at least, and it's not even close.
Do they describe it here? Do they, like, explain what it is?
Later, when they start to do it.
Okay,
and they explain
okay,
it
yeah,
like someone reading a Wikipedia article about it, but yeah.
Okay, great. Because, yeah, just mechanically, wow, what a dead card it is. It is truly just nothing. Holy shit.
And, like, it doesn't do anything that just straight up, like, maybe, stabbing Fiona wouldn't accomplish, or, like, again, just
gun.
Having
gotta,
her gun
gotta really gotta promote gun in this situation.
Like, gun, or even just, you know, the standard of burning her at the stake for her crime. Like, there's, like, a lot of things you could do that would net the same outcome. And
howitzer cannon. Yeah.
Or, and again, on that list is acceptable, just letting the cancer take her. Because they know that it's going to be, like, within a month. Like, just wait her out. Just timer scam her. Truly. But this, they don't. They have to make
Abrams
this plan.
Tank. Yeah. a lot of ways you could do this.
And so they come up with this plan, or they're going to come up with this plan, rather. And then Zoe interjects after Delia's like, we have to kill Fiona. Zoe's like, we have to kill Fiona. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, Zoe. you had to ask like two additional second opinions after Delia, the person who's still the one giving you this information, gave you this information last episode. You like gave Spalding speech so that you could get this information again and then stab him for no reason, really, except for maybe to give him motive to betray the house, I guess.
And they need him to be dead for another reason coming up soon.
Yeah, that's also true, unfortunately. Yeah. And they didn't know how to do that other than, you know, when they could have killed him is when they thought that he had killed Madison. They could have been like, whoopsie doopsie, yeah, we accidentally killed a guy we thought was doing necrophilia because he said he was. They don't do that. They just have Zoe stab him arbitrarily for no reason. Anyway, Zoe fucking sucks. And as they're having this conversation, someone is incessantly ringing the doorbell. Like, let me in, ring the doorbell. And that's the first time Delia's like, where are Delphine and Spalding? And then no one answers her, and then she doesn't follow up on it. And this is when,
does she know?
Yeah, I'm like, for someone with
she
the
doesn't
sight,
know.
Not a lot of sight going on here in Delia's court.
It's going to be baffling considering something that happens later in the episode. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, if you thought the sight was a crazy power now, you wait until the end of this episode when it's about to get absolutely batshit insane.
Problematically good. Yeah.
Yeah. Good, but also not good enough to solve any plot holes. It will only open more plot holes, regrettably. So anyway, she doesn't ask anything about Queenie being missing. She does not ask any follow-up questions about Delphine and Spalding. Zoe goes to answer the door, and it's Misty at the door. Like, you gotta save me. You gotta let me in. And I'm like, you already kind of, like, have access to the house. That you've already been told you can like be here. This is not like you're running like someone is act like Michael Myers is after you. This isn't really a ring the doorbell situation. Like, you can just come in. You can just come inside.
She's a little airheaded, Misty. You know, we love her.
She is. I love her, but she is a little stupid. Not Ryan. Wildly enough, not the stupidest person in this episode.
No.
Misty is like, here's a flashback to tell you what I'm running from. And we get a flashback of one night she's like sleeping in her shack in the swamp. And
yeah.
She wakes up to Myrtle just standing by her bed like, Mom, I threw up. And she's like, aw, you probably don't know where you are because you're like a zombie or whatever. And I brought you back to life. How you doing, bud? And Myrtle's like, no, I'm fine, actually. There's a guy walking around the shack with a gun.
Literally circling the shack is what she says, which that's like behavior that like jaguars have when they're getting ready to take down prey. Not like a hunter. You know what hunters usually do when they're like hunters of men? You lie down and wait for very long periods of time, for agonizingly long periods of time sometimes. But the thing you never do is move around a lot in obvious ways.
Yeah, and like Myrtle's even like, yeah, like I noticed him when he almost stepped on my face. I'm like, so he walked up on that big ass like mound of dirt. Like, he's not like, making any effort to like hide himself.
Was he like running around up front, like hoping she would walk outside so he'd like teabag a little bit before he no-scoped her? Like, what the fuck?
This man's playing Fortnite, like he's playing no build mode, like waiting for he's like this, he's like fucking campers, man. She hasn't left the shack the whole time. And then Misty's like, wait, do you hear that? Which I'm like, this feels like the kind of thing where you don't like say, do you hear that? You're just like, oh shit, I have some knowledge. We need to act on it. But like, anyway, it's dumb fucking knowledge anyway, so it doesn't matter. She's like, do you hear that? The cicadas have stopped singing. And I'm like, that's nothing. That's not a thing. I've seen Higurashi. I know that the cicadas don't give a shit about a murder. I think
I
what you're thinking of
Indiana.
Is birds.
You can, yeah, I grew up in Indiana. You can set off fireworks. They don't care. They truly don't give a shit.
Yeah, like cicadas don't stop making noise because a predator is nearby. You're thinking of birds.
Yeah,
that's a different thing entirely.
Cicadas are like famously annoying in how they do not shut up for anything.
And then like instantaneously as she says that, Hank, presumably, because we don't see his face, but like, who the fuck else would it be? Kicks open the front door after making noise, and we hear his footsteps, which again, trash assassin, absolutely dog water assassin. Kicks open the front door of the shack and starts blasting a shotgun. And I'm like, man, how did you get hired? Like, you, the one kill you got that was like kind of clean and assassiny was the Thomas Kincaid lady. And like, she thought you were a nice man who liked Thomas Kincaid puzzles.
She was just too lovely. Yeah. That was like skill issue positive on her part. Just too kind.
Yeah, and like you got like too close to her because she like fell for a long con. Like this isn't a long, maybe that's it. Maybe he's just like, maybe when Marie Laveau was like, you're doing a bad job, you fell in love with your mark. He's like, no, I can only work under situations in which I am deep undercover. I can't do action scenarios. I have to pretend I'm like in love with the person.
Like a long ball specialist. Like, yeah. Only really goes for the big game. Okay.
He absolutely refuses to just go for, like, a normal... We see him later trying to go for just, like, a normal snipe, and he kills two of the wrong people and then leaves. Yeah. So
this guy fucking hates speedrunning. Detests it.
He has to, like, everything that he does has to take a minimum of 3 years. Otherwise, he won't do it. Or he just beeps it. He just does it, like, incredibly wrong. Anyway, he beefs it and does it wrong, and Misty gets away.
To be clear, when he kicks down the door and fires a shotgun, he doesn't look. He just YOLOs and guesses where the bed is and just raw dog shoots the bed. And then afterwards is like, damn, no one was in the bed. Which, that's like crazy. Like, again, worst hitman I've ever seen. Like, the number one thing you need to do as a hitman is kill your target. And the number two thing, ideally, is not kill things that aren't your target. And that was like a huge failure on both accords.
I would argue that a third thing is not get seen, which was the first thing that he failed.
Okay.
There's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. He was thinking maybe no witnesses, but like, yeah, you really shouldn't just, you know, be running around in front of cameras in the first place.
Yeah. So Misty recants all this to the people in the house. And then Delia's like, who is this? Who's this lady? And she touches, she being Delia, touches Misty's hand without saying anything. She does not warn Misty that she has, like, the sight. And so the second she touches Misty's hand, she goes, ah! And, like, like, creams her jeans.
I was going to say, she makes a noise that I would say is, like, 50% of the way between creaming her jeans and, like, feeling a bug crawl on her leg. It's, like, somewhere between those.
Let me just say, it's the kind of noise that if someone, like, did it after they touched your hand, you'd be like, whoa, what the fuck?
I'm out of here.
A little touch-starved, huh, buddy?
I'll take my chances with the bad hit, man.
Yeah. He's got a 0%, like, consistency rate. It's fine. Delia really needs to warn people that she's going to do this if she's just going to be touching people's hands. And she, like, she sees Misty's, Mind Palace, where she sees Misty getting, like, burned or whatever. And she's like, oh, you're Misty. And I'm like, you could have just, like, let Misty say that instead of doing what you did. You didn't really give her a chance to, like, say who she was. And then they walk everybody to the greenhouse, and Myrtle's in there and, like, kind of normal again. Like, she looks normal. She doesn't look normal in the Mom I Threw Up scene. She's still, like... looks like a little bit like, yeah, she looks like Freddy Krueger a little bit, but she's fine now. I guess her hair is not real or something. And she's like, hey, I'm back. And Delia's like, yay, you're back. And Myrtle is like, resurrection is the strongest power. It's better than the Supreme's power, even, which is about to open a thought process that makes no sense based on everything we've been told up until now. And we're in, what, episode 8?
Yes.
Myrtle, who is one of the council members, by the way, or was before she died, is like, yeah, no, we, like, a bunch of us in this room were resurrected by one witch, and that's, like, a more important power than any of the powers the Supreme has, which means, behold, our next Supreme, and she, like...
Okay, and, like, here's the thing, right? Like, she had a point until... There's, like, where she's like, this is a better and more important power than any of the other ones that are of the Seven Wonders of the Supreme. And I'm like, yeah, Resurrection's really good. Like, that's really fucking busto. That's a great point, Myrtle. So she's the new Supreme. Now, hold on. The whole thing about it having a codified system is it's a codified system. You can't just be like, yeah, she's Supreme now. Like, no.
Words mean nothing to anybody in this show. Because
also there's been other witches with the power of resurgence, right? That's why it's like already got a name.
Including, but not limited to, Fiona, the current Supreme, who we watched bring Queenie back to life already. Yeah, no, they're going to arbitrarily, they being the writers of the show, are going to arbitrarily decide that this character, Myrtle, who has been upholding the codes and laws of the witches at large, I guess, is going to arbitrarily decide that having the power of resurrection supersedes having the Seven Wonders when it comes to being the Supreme, when really the only criteria, at least that we've seen, of being the Supreme is having the Seven Wonders. yeah
That's it.
Yep.
But even funnier still is that Myrtle says to Delia, the blind character, behold, our next Supreme. And then she gestures to Misty, which is funny for two reasons. One, because when she gestures to Misty, Misty is watering Delia's plants like a little goblin and just kind of looks over her shoulder all hunched over like a dog you caught chewing on plastic, which is very funny. It's secondly very funny because Myrtle doesn't say who she's pointing at. And doesn't, and like Delia presumably doesn't know that Misty's piddling around in her plants. So like she just gestures to a person and doesn't give any more information to the blind character. It's like those videos you see of like that coach like waiting for a high five from the little blind boy who's playing the sport. Like real big, they forgot this character was blind, and they forgot that us, the audience, weren't the only people who were seeing what was going on. it's so much. Anyway, that's the setup for what's going to happen. We're about halfway through the episode, and we're going to talk about the worst scene so far.
Here it is. Yep.
Well,
Kyle is watching the weird the weird Mickey Mouse videos on YouTube. And yeah, it sucks. So Zoe's hanging out with Kyle. Madison is not here at the moment. So that means Kyle is at the moment a preschooler or like a toddler or whatever, yes. Which is extra gross considering they just did a three-way as their last action. don't love it. And yeah, it's just straight up giving him videos that are like, even after like Madison clearly displayed like, no, he's got like a higher level of thinking going on back there, he just can't like speak or anything, and like he's struggling with language. There are like tools and programs for adults to learn language. So, like, that's not a thing that hasn't happened before in the history of medicine. Like, we've seen this. There's protocols. You don't have to show them, you know.
It's not like
A is for apple, B is for banana. Like, yeah. that's rude. You're talking down to him.
So like YouTube Kids came out. Finally, something we can do for literacy, like adult literacy, is solved. Thank you, iPad. Thank you, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, gonna hand my zombie boyfriend an iPad and put Bluey on it for him so that he can learn shapes and colors. Because I definitely view him as a grown man with adult faculties who can consent Anyway, he's like, oh, hey, one of my two girlfriends is here. And he, like, goes to kiss her. And she's like, no, we can't have sex right now. You need to watch your shapes and colors. She being Zoe is like, you need to watch your shapes and colors so I can go downstairs and get ready to murder Fiona.
Oh, I'm sorry. The notes say, gotta watch Bluey, which is vile. I love it. But that really is the vibe. Yeah. It's so gross.
It really is.
And then the second half of this this enigma of a decision that they've made for these characters walks in, and it's Madison, and she's like, oh, hey, our boyfriend, and, like, gives him a little kiss. And she's like, it's fine, don't worry. Remember, we're sharing him. I don't care that you guys were kissing in here. It's fine. Which, like, Madison says something to the effect of, like, why are you making him watch kids' videos? He's a guy. He's just, like, a man. Like, he's, like, not all there because we resurrected him or whatever, but, like, he's still, like, a guy, a man, not a baby. And then Zoe's like, no, I view our boyfriend that we have sex with as a child. And it's like, okay, I don't, this makes Zoe infinitely worse.
There's so much problematic shit going on in this scene. It's unfucking believable. Yes, there's like really. No right way to approach this fucking mess.
But like, there's no reason for them to have done it either. You can just advance them a little more. Like, you know, writers. You know what I mean? Like,
doesn't, like, give us characteristics for, like, Zoe and Madison either, because, like, if we're looking at it strictly from Madison's point of view, and we had none of Zoe being like, A is for apple, here's a flashcard, then, like, it could be argued that, like, Madison is correct. He's just, like, a guy who's having trouble remembering stuff and speaking.
He's, like, mute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now Zoe has made it fucking weird for us, the audience, because now we have to be like, well, is Zoe right? Is he functionally a toddler? Because if so, what the fuck is this storyline? What the actual fuck is this storyline? And why did you introduce this character as being a survivor of sexual assault? Like, why are you doing this to us?
additional lighter question, perhaps. If you tried to do a revival spell out of a witch book, and you knew witchcraft was real, and you knew it normally worked well and could, like, get good results, and you did a revival spell, and the person got up and was, like, having problems, such as being mute and not being fully of their faculties, you would, like, check the spells, right? You'd be like, oh, I think we need to do a different spell or something. Like, I feel like that would be the first go-to. Did they ever do that?
No. And what is, like, a little confusing is Misty gets involved, and, like, Misty can do the good resurrection, and, like, you'd think that maybe she's like, hey, can, like, one of y'all, like, re-kill him? Because then I can bring him back better. I can bring him back,
that,
like,
the
good way.
That would have been so much better of a play. Oh, right? My God. If only Madison was, like, extremely on her bad bitch era, because she would have done it.
Oh, yeah.
I believe.
If she hadn't gotten smoked by Fiona, that would have been her next play, I'm sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, anyway, they have that that conversation, and then they go downstairs to start the more confusing part of this episode. And as she's leaving, Zoe's like, no, the computer's too loud. And she, like, pulls out a big set of headphones. I don't know what this is for other than to make us feel weird, because, like, it's not like, oh, we got to make sure Kyle doesn't hear us doing a ritual. Like, I don't know why we have a scene where she puts headphones on Kyle, but she puts headphones on Kyle and Kyle pogs super hard.
He sure does.
Like, holy shit, they're sounding my ears. That's so cool. And I'm like,
it's like there's a little guy talking straight into him. Holy shit.
Even Delphine wasn't that bad, you know?
Delphine saw a phone vibrate one time and was like, what the fuck? And then she's like, oh, okay, that's normal now. That's fine.
And then she was like, let's order the fast food. Like, she caught on quick. Kyle's a toddler. Zoe was right, unfortunately. Like,
yeah, if he pogs when you put headphones on him, don't have sex with him. That, I feel like, is the line in the sand, is if he pogs when you put headphones on him.
Uh-oh, I better watch out if I'm dating anyone with really good headphones.
Yeah, So anyway.
Oh no, I'm dating an audiophile. I better be on guard.
Oh no, these are $800 headphones.
Oh, they sound so good, but I have to act nonplussed or I'm not getting any.
You haven't died, right? What? You said you listened to my podcast anyway, so.
So to speed run the next 4 minutes of television, they get ready to do, here's what's confusing. They're not doing the ritual. They're not doing the sacred taking. They're all getting dressed to talk about doing the ritual of the sacred taking, because they don't actually like do anything. They all just get dressed for the ritual, which is not going to take place right now. They all get dressed in like red cloaks and put veils on while they get a weird little history lesson from Myrtle and Delia, and I'm like, do we need to get dressed for it? Like, you couldn't have just like told them like in the living room or whatever. I guess it's because they wanted us to see this, and they knew that, like, the thing about it is, not joking, like, full sincerity, they wanted this to be they wanted the sacred taking to be a ritual because they needed conflict for some reason, even though we have, like, 6 running plots right now. They needed conflict, and just waiting for Fiona to die or just having Fiona get burned at the stake was for some reason not enough. So they're like, we got to make up a ritual, I guess, to make this home alone ass plan come to fruition so we can get a sequence of this happening. But even the ritual that they're about to describe does not require them to like get dressed up in red cloaks, because it's not like a human sacrifice. It's just, we have to convince Fiona to kill herself. That's the TLDR of it, is we got to convince Fiona to kill herself. And I'm like, well, why? Because we've seen that if, like, you just kill the Supreme, it still works. It functionally is the same thing, because that's what Fiona did to the previous Supreme. You can just kill them. You don't got to do whatever this is. There doesn't need to be a ritual. This isn't a ritual, even. And what's even more confusing is when Delia is making them do this, like, fake ritual, like, just listening to it while dressed for the ritual, she's like, all right, we're gonna do the sacred taking. This has only happened 3 times since 1692, which is 320 years ago when this aired. And she's like, it's only happened 3 times. And I'm like, okay, even if we're being real generous and saying that each Supreme died at 60, that's, like, 5 Supremes total that we've had. 3 out of 5 is a lot. That's a lot of Supremes. And that's not even counting the one that Fiona murdered. So, like,
and, like, even if you're willing to go, like, super loosey-goosey on the math and be like, okay, let's assume every Supreme dies at 50 and the new one starts at age 20. So that's 30 years per Supreme. That's still, like, 10. And that's like 3 out of 10. That's still a really bad rate.
Yeah.
That's still like more likely to die as Supreme due to the taking than go to jail as mayor of Chicago. Like, that's bad. You don't want that.
And again, that's not counting the one that Fiona just straight up murdered. And we don't know that other ones didn't murder the Supreme before them. Like, it's not unheard
of.
That's
different. That's the unsacred taking. Oh. That's when you just take. That's
the taking.
Thievery through taking. Yeah, thievery by taking.
You're not even sacred. You're just taking. It's ridiculous.
You didn't even put on a cool red cloak or anything to look like the Handmaid's Tale. This is bullshit. Yeah, and so, like, when Delia tries to explain the first time it happened, which was in 1692, she's like, it was the Supreme at the time of the Salem witch trials, and, like, they were gonna do the Underground Railroad, but for witches. And they're like, but the Supreme at the time was too old to do it, so they had her kill herself, or she offered to kill herself so that a new Supreme could speedrun being the Supreme and lead them to New Orleans.
They needed protection for a very short part of the Oregon Trail, except it's before the Oregon Trail even, because that starts in, like, Ohio.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, I mean, like, she couldn't, like, is it just because she was old? Like, that was the problem? You just didn't want to take, like, an old lady with her?
Yeah, like she was so old, she wouldn't really be helpful on the trip. But like, I don't know. Like, you can still like shoot a fireball,
right? Like, you're magic. Like, what the fuck?
Like, it, what a
you
like,
can bring people back.
That's not even a ritual at that point. That's just like, oh man, we gotta bring the Supreme with us. She's like old. Someone's gonna have to like carry her. Hey, could you just like kill yourself actually, so that we don't have to take you with us? Like,
when will they make adult diapers? I don't know. Not yet, but just get to killing yourself. Whatever. Like.
Yeah, and they make it sound like it was a ritual they did, and they even show, like, all of the witches, like, breathing into each other's mouths and, like, touching fingers after slicing their fingers and making a blood pact, and then, like, tossing her down a well or whatever, like Sadako from The Ring. And I'm like, what
if it's just, like, a big gaslighting thing? Like, they're the new Supreme's a pain in the ass, the old Supreme's a pain in the ass, so it's like, yep, secret taking ritual, it's all a thing, you know, whatever.
Yeah, this is totally legit. We totally didn't just kill this old lady because we didn't want to take her with us.
Well, we kissed, now get in the well, Grandma. Yeah, like, it's...
Jeez.
So they treat it like it's going to be this big thing, and then Madison says what we're all thinking, which is, Fiona's not going to kill herself. She said that at the beginning of the episode. She says, I'm not going to kill myself because I'm full of spite. And I'm like, yeah, she said, I'm not going to kill myself. I'm full of spite. Madison makes a great point. And then they're like, that's where our Home Alone sequence kicks in. We're going to trick her into killing herself. And I'm like, why can't you just stab her? Why are we doing a Home Alone sequence? Just
gaslight
stab her with a
montage.
Knife. Yeah. Why can't we just stab her with a real knife and or just set her on fire like we've established is the punishment for doing a murder? Why are we doing this?
Oh, yeah.
They, like, really at some point in their, like, descriptions of characters were like, yeah, Fiona's just invincible, right? And, like, the answer has been, like, no the entire time. But they're like, yeah, she's invincible. Every time they just, like, talk about how hard it is to kill her when it's like, the Supreme has been shown to be susceptible to damage on numerous occasions.
Also, like, what was the point of that trial for her, like, a few episodes ago, if, like, we have to do this whole, like, ritual? You know what I mean? Like, what if she was found guilty? They can't kill her? They need her to do the sacred taking or something, you know?
That's what I'm saying, is, like, the sacred taking is nothing. They just really wanted to do this Home Alone sequence. and they wanted a reason why... I guess, why the main characters wouldn't just be like, oh, she's got a month left to live? Yeah, just keep the girls away from her and let the cancer do its job. Ta-da! Like, they needed people to be active.
I'm gonna go buy a katana and cut her fucking head off from behind, because I can just do that.
Yeah, Madison has pyromancy. We could just set her on fire. Like, we don't have to make a stake or anything. We can just, like, do our own little burning at the stake ritual.
You could make a poison. For sure that would get her. Like, this is easy. You make her food.
Marie
like,
Laveau, my mom brought back that Delphine lady, so truce is still on if you want to take revenge. Just saying, you know? There's a few paths here.
But no, we have to make up a weird ritual that we don't even do, by the way, so that we have the name of this episode, I suppose. And this is about the halfway point of the episode, because we haven't even done their Home Alone-ass bullshit that they're going to be doing. They're just, like, setting up for it. That will be the second half of the episode, and boy, howdy, is that a sequence with a capital S, and is it ever followed by another sequence with a capital S? Holy shit.
Yeah, get ready for a whole lot of exposition and a whole lot of plans happening, and then, like, afterwards, someone just being like, no. Just not having it happen. You're gonna hate it.
Almost as much as I did, I'm sure.
Woof.
Well, till next time, folks. We'll be doing part two of Sacred Taking, where, oh God, yeah, I'm just like looking through the notes too and just being like, oh boy. Mm-hmm. Oh boy. Till next time, folks.
Later.